The Wake Up Call with Richard Martin, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of GF Investment Services, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments based off of Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Richard Martin with a wake-up call bright and early on Monday morning, and it is the 12th of April 2010. The first thing I would like to tell you is that by happenstance, it appears to me that my show from yesterday, the Sunday, April the 11th, show entitled Richard Martin's Discussion Group on Your Archives, could be seen as my signature show for 2010. I don't often give a show that I fully recommend myself for the listeners to listen to, but you may remember I had one last year in early January. I do believe that this might be considered my show of reference for the year 2010. In any event, ladies and gentlemen, if you are listening to the archives of this show, or if you are indeed listening live and you have limited time to listen to my broadcast, I sincerely recommend that you curtail your listening right now, go over to the archives, listen to my show of yesterday, Sunday, April the 11th, on the Richard Martin Discussion Group tab. I think you'll find it informative. It's something I did mention to you a couple of weeks ago, and I mentioned it to you, I think, last Friday. Some of you may have listened already, and maybe others have listened to the archives, but I do sincerely recommend that is one for the books, ladies and gentlemen. So there we go. I thought we'd start with something that I received from listener Eric Halverson, and I thank him greatly for this. It's an indication of Mike Whitney's take on what the government's doing in the mortgage market these days. It's quite important for you to understand this. You know, your government is, in my opinion, very underhand, very deceitful, and it goes about its business in mysterious ways, and that's putting it kindly. And certainly, they didn't waste any time. It didn't take them long, or it didn't take long for Wall Street to figure out how to game Obama's new mortgage modification program. The plan was hyped as help for struggling homeowners, but it actually turns out it's just another stealth bailout for pudgy bank executives. It's funny, the program hasn't even kicked in yet, and already big-time speculators are riffling through their filing cabinets looking for any garbage paper they can find to dump on Uncle Sam. Already, according to a recent Bloomberg report, and I quote, subprime mortgage securities are rising at an accelerating pace as the U.S. begins to encourage reductions to homeowners' balances, which may lead to fewer foreclosures and a quicker end to the housing slump. Senior-ranked bonds tied to borrowers with poor credit will mostly benefit, after the Treasury Department said for the first time it would seek to cut the size of mortgages, reducing the likelihood that loan modifications will fail, according to J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, Morgan Stanley, and Barclays PLC. And so, according to Bloomberg, what does it mean? It means that Obama's mortgage modification extravaganza has touched off a gold rush in toxic paper. Subprime securitizations, which had been worth next to nothing, are now the hottest trade on Wall Street. It's a subprime bonanza. The investment sharpies are scarfing up all the crummy MBSs they can get their hands on because they know they can trade it in for AAA FHA-backed loans when the program gets going. It's another swindle cooked up by Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner to keep the brokerage clan in the clover. And here's how a veteran from Wall Street explained it, and I quote, "It looks like the investors in securitizations will be swapping underwater real estate for government-insured paper. I think the scam here is just to provide some cover so the hedge funds and other high-net-worth individuals can trade their low-grade paper for AAA mortgages insured by the FHA at the taxpayer expense." That's it in a nutshell. The artificial or foreclosure prevention program has nothing to do with helping homeowners. That's just diversionary gibberish to confuse the public. The real objective is to create a government landfill, otherwise known as FHA, where the banks and other financial institutions can dump their toxic MBS sludge and walk away with government-backed loans. Get a load of this from Bloomberg. The Federal Reserve's completion this week of its program to buy $1.25 trillion in mortgage bonds probably won't mean significantly higher U.S. home loan rates as investors return to the market, replacing the Fed. What we're seeing is an effective handoff occurring between the Fed and industry buyers such as banks and pension funds. And that was according to Christopher Siebold, the chief investment officer for Advantus Capital Management in St. Paul, Minnesota. Advantus is purchasing mortgage bonds after the Fed's program drained supply in the $5.4 trillion market. And, of course, Bloomberg again. Of course, they're purchasing mortgage bonds because the government is going to insure them. It's a no-brainer. And don't you love that expression, a handoff? Because that's exactly what it is. The government hasn't stopped pumping liquidity into the system. They've just found another entry point where they can push it in. And here's how it works. The new program offers incentive to banks and other deep-pocketed investors in mortgage-backed securities to slash the principal on underwater mortgages, which keeps people from strategic default or foreclosure. Sounds good, right? But here's the catch. When the mortgage is refinanced, it's converted into a FHA-backed loan, which provides an explicit government guarantee. So for a slight loss on the face value of the MBS, the investors, i.e. investment banks, hedges, etc., are able to resuscitate their moribund securities, the MBSs, and reap hefty gains. It's like taking Fido's steaming pile on the front lawn and turning it into the Hope Diamond. Abracadabra. Geithner has figured out how to put together a bailout that will cost taxpayers hundreds of billions of dollars without any money actually changing hands. The value of the putrid mortgage paper will soar because of the government underwriting, and the massive losses won't be realized until the mortgages start blowing up sometime in the future. That's when FHA will be put out to pasture along with fellow homicide victims Fannie and Freddie. Pretty clever, huh? So the cutthroat speculators and bunko artists who fleeced us all with their worthless subprimes have returned for another dip at the public trough. That means taxpayers will get scalped on the same investments a second time. Hey, a double whammy. This really takes the cake. You've got to hand it to the snivelling scamster Geithner. He had his back to the wall, and presto, he extracts another rabbit from his hat. What a guy. He knew he couldn't go begging to Congress for more money, or they'd kick him to the curb. So he worked out a scam that picks up where the Fed's $1.25 trillion quantitative easing bailout leaves off. That's money printing for those who don't speak gibberish English. It's a seamless transition from one massive corporate giveaway to the next. Now the Fed has nearly $2 trillion worth of structured garbage on its balance sheet, which it will undoubtedly dump on Fannie or Freddie. The banks are loaded with fresh reserves, and another trillion or so is earmarked for the shadow bankers who provide funding to the regulated banking system. And it's all 100% free. Such a deal. This bank credit cabal is robbing us blind in broad daylight, and no one seems to give a hoot. Maybe Barack Obama will save us all from ruin. That chance. All right. Richard Martin here. This is the wake-up call. The number to call in is 888-873-4643. That's the toll-free number for your questions, comments, rants, and other forms of communication you may wish to share with us. Again, the toll-free number, 888-873-4643. If you'd like to email me, for those of us who are not familiar with the way in which these things work, we have an email facility for you to email me, which is now open and ready to receive your emails on rm@gfawd.com. Again, that's rm for Richard Martin at gfawd for Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design.com. Once more, the email address. rm@gfawd.com. Finally, if you would like to call me in private, this is a very welcome service that I would like to offer you, that you may talk to me about your personal affairs. I would be glad to do what I can to help. I seem to be spending more and more time on this particular feature of what we do here at PRN, and it is, as I say, a service that I provide, and I am very happy to do it. There are more and more people, obviously, in serious trouble, and certainly according to the way in which it comes down to my experience, you really need to do this. So if you want to call me, please feel free. Call me on my private line at 941-441-1682. Once again, my private phone line in Florida, which will be call forwarded automatically to Singapore, where I am. It is 941-441-1682. All right, well, as I said at the beginning of the show, please do listen in to my show from yesterday, the 11th of April, what I would describe my signature show of the year. It is very confronting, but the reaction that I have had from it has been very, very positive already. In the last few hours, I've had enormous numbers of people. I really mean people. I mean, I can't count the number of calls and emails I've had from people thanking me for that show, and all of them in support of what I say. So I do recommend that you go to the archive under Richard Martin's discussion group and listen to yesterday's show, the 11th of April, Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And we'll be back, of course, next Sunday with another show, probably a lot of follow-up on this show, which you might wish to contribute to. So one way or another, I hope you enjoy it. All right. Well, just a quick word on the unemployment figures from a couple of weeks ago. I don't believe that we spoke last week. Last Monday, there was a glitch and in PRN, and so I didn't get to discuss this, but as you probably know, according to the official stopwatch, 163,000 people found jobs in America last month. 48,000 of them were jobs with the U.S. Census Bureau. Those jobs are temporary and useless. If you could create wealth by having people count one another, perhaps we could create even more wealth by having them count the stars in the heavens or the grains of sand on Malibu Beach. Take off the counters, and that leaves 114,000. Now take off the statistical adjustment for births and deaths, that ridiculous model that they use to manipulate the figures, and the statistical adjustments for bad weather, and the statistical ledger domain that disappears people who are too discouraged to continue to look for work, and you actually have a negative number. The economy actually lost jobs in March, ladies and gentlemen. According to John Williams, who keeps track of the figures, joblessness rose in March to 21.7%, which is just a tad lower than the worst figure from the Great Depression. Well, in the free market economies, recessions are necessary in order to purge excesses, especially debts. But thanks to the anti-free market actions taken by the activist government of the United States, bailing out crony capitalists, bailing out the fiscally irresponsible binge-spending consumers, bailing out the bankrupt state governments, bailing out nearly everyone except the fiscally prudent, we've had a severe recession but made no progress in purging the enormous debts. Indeed, the country's financial position is worse than ever. Over the past decade, the country has lost nearly a third of its manufacturing jobs and 20% of its information technology jobs. Since the beginning of the recession in December 2007, the United States has lost 13.3% of its manufacturing jobs, or 2.1 million jobs. Despite all the federal stimulus money thrown at the recession, the United States has done virtually nothing to improve its manufacturers' competitive position. Indeed, it's added to their burden with the passage of another massive entitlement program, i.e. healthcare. And by the way, what irritated me most about that healthcare debate was the sham argument that it would somehow reduce the nation's deficit. The history of these giant entitlement programs is quite clear. After adjusting for inflation, Medicaid now costs 37 times more than it did at its launch, way, way beyond the original projections. Medicare cost nearly eight times what Congress had initially forecast. Social Security, all you need to know is that there's absolutely no money put aside for the pensions promised to the baby boomers just beginning to retire. All the money that I, for example, put into the social security system for more than 20 years, supposedly to finance my retirement, is gone, used to fund the pensions of others who have come before. Indeed, this year there won't even be enough pay-as-you-go receipts to cover the year's social security outlays, forcing the government to borrow an estimated $28 billion to fund the payouts. And yet there was House Speaker Nancy Pelosi having the nerve to declare that, and I quote, over the life of this health care bill, it will create 4 million new jobs and cut the deficit by $1.3 trillion. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, quote, in truth, it is the biggest deficit reduction bill any of us will have any opportunity to vote on in this Congress, and indeed any other Congresses as well. What kind of a turnip chuck do they think we all fell off? All these savings will supposedly be created by adding 32 million currently uninsured Americans essentially to the poorly functioning Medicaid program. I guess eventually the program may grow enough to add 4 million more bureaucrats to the government's payroll, but the new jobs won't come from private industry. Caterpillar, and a long list of other private companies, recently came out with estimates of their additional first-year costs. Giant manufacturer and exporter Caterpillar forecast their costs would increase by $100 million and noted that it could, quote, ill afford cost increases that place us at a disadvantage versus our global competitors, end of quote. Well, the saddest part about what they call the decade from hell is that we didn't learn anything from it. The United States is losing manufacturing jobs because its companies are non-competitive. Apparently the solution is make them less competitive. The country is burdened by enormous debts. The solution, spend, mostly waste, record amounts of money and pile even more government debt. The social security nets are woefully underfunded. One solution, massively increase entitlement benefits. We don't save any money. The solutions drive interest rates, drastically increase tax rates on investments and encourage more consumer spending, cash for clunkers, etc. The Fed continually creates debilitating asset bubbles. The solution, create some more. And that's exactly what they did in the 1930s. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a carbon copy of the mistakes and the crazy policies which elongated a perfectly standardized 18-month recession into a 15-year depression. We have been deluding ourselves for years that spendthrift policies would have led to an earlier crisis if not for willingness of foreigners to fund our follies, thanks to the U.S. dollar's position as the world's reserve currency. When many of the biggest lenders, the Chinese and the Russians and others, began to hesitate recently reducing their U.S. Treasury holdings, a new source of funding was required to avoid a funding crisis. And that's, of course, when the Fed stepped in this past year by monetizing the debt directly through $300 trillion of U.S. Treasury security purchases, and indirectly with over $1.4 trillion of mortgage purchases. I find it utterly preposterous that just a few weeks ago, Fed Chairman Bernanke told Congress, and I quote, "We're not going to monetize the debt, as the Fed has been doing exactly that through its quantitative easing money printing operations for more than a year." I remind you again, quantitative easing is money printing. There can be no sugarcoating this. The government leaders in the United States are not telling you the truth. The day of reckoning for America has been postponed yet again by massive government interventions. The past interventions bought time and created periods of euphoria that didn't last. With each failure, the country has ended up in an even worse situation. Ultimately, there will come a time when the government's hands will be tied, forcing a market-based solution upon it. There's a funding crisis ahead. As the Greeks and other European pigs countries have recently found out to their dismay, a country cannot keep spending beyond its means forever. Ladies and gentlemen, today I am just as certain as ever that the problems of the world are not solved. A new secular bull market in the market has not begun, and even bigger troubles lie ahead. And I will try my best to help you prepare accordingly. Okay. Well, I had an interesting email from Frank the other day, and I thought I would let you have it. And it says as follows, "Richard, the attached email is from a friend of mine who I share your emails with and who has started to listen to the archives. He has an engineering degree but couldn't find a job in that field, so he went into the family trade, tiling. He does excellent work and has built up a small business in a very affluent suburb of New Jersey full of Wall Street types. His business is way down, as he says, quote, 'I am doing a lot of quoting and very few jobs,' end of quote. He is getting more small jobs such as touch-up work from desperate ex-Wall Street hotshots who are trying to dump their million-plus houses. Ironically, some current customers are the same people he did elaborate bathrooms for during the boom years. I remember you and I discussing in January the fact that you believed it had started to turn down and that the powers that be could not keep propping it up due to the immense political pressure that was building. The fraud continues to defy logic. My friend gives his theory, and both he and I would like your opinion on what false means are causing an insanely overvalued, overextended market to keep defying logic. We know what the PPT, that's the plunge protection, is doing on low volume days after 3:20 p.m., but how can anyone who has a choice buy any treasuries except very short term? Why isn't the interest rate commensurate with the risk? Is this market an extension of the suicide double-down theory being practiced by the Fed, the Treasury, and the current administration? Has somebody repealed the basic laws of economics and mathematics? I do disagree on one thing you have stated. I think you give Obama way too much credit. For such a supposedly brilliant man, he has made some very stupid appointments, akin to appointing arsonists as fire marshals. I have no sympathy for any politician who begs to be elected and then discovers after the election that he didn't realize how difficult the task would be. I knew how difficult the task would be, but I also wasn't suffering from a Jesus complex. A shrewd political observer once said, you don't elect just a man to the office, you elect his Rolodex. I see no reason to give him any benefit of a doubt. I address this in an economic sense rather than a political one. We cannot agree on everything, and I continue to be very grateful for all your help over these past years. Looking forward to hearing your opinion. Regards from the foxhole, Frank. And here is the email. Frank, obviously I was wrong about yesterday. My hour-long view is still intact. What is happening gives me pause to think. I think the following contains a real moment of clarity. The stock market, like the housing, is being supported by continuing free money, so what must happen for the market to go down? My guess is that big money has to pull out at an accelerated rate, enough to overwhelm the rate free money can hold it up. So what would cause this? The only ones getting hurt are the little people. Me, my kids, are all fish in a barrel, and it's all future ruination. We are feeling some pain now, but we will really feel it when this thing collapses through taxes, chronic unemployment, or underemployment. I am a perfect example of both. Someone who should have been problem-solving in a factory, not building bathrooms. When will the piling of debt finally come crashing down? The big players all seem okay with this game. The Chinese are taking near valueless paper in bonds and cash green toilet paper for goods. The Arabs taking the same for oil. Anyone buying our bonds on a scale or taking our cash seem happy. All of the big players, government and business, both have a vested interest in this thing continuing. I have no answers, just a belief that all players are okay with paper of diminishing value both today and in the future. That is what the market is telling me. That is why it continues to go up. The market is not following fundamentals, and it seems that technical analysis is worthless. It's following the above game. Please send this on to Richard or Shepherd or both. I will try to listen to Richard live today. Maybe I will be brave enough to ask a question. What time is he on, and what is the phone number to call in? Or maybe you could forward this email to him. This whole thing is sick and immoral. The only good news is the good news. John. Well, yes, and I actually have another email, which I thought I would just let you have, because I think my answer will have to apply to both. From Tina Medaloni, who says, wow, informative commentary. Hi, Richard, I know you're away on vacation. Have a blast. A quick question about the S&P E-mini futures. Is this a good time to sell short? I obviously know that you're bearish, but it seems so hard to time. The stock market just doesn't want to go down. Best, Tina Medaloni. Well, I think I would start by saying that it really shouldn't be lost on anyone that the S&P is still 24% down from the highs, and it's really gone nowhere now for over a decade. So unless you're a really gifted day trader, all one is left with is three bull markets, two bubbles, two collapses, and a heck of a lot of volatility, and nothing to show for it except a lot of red ink and a lot of sleepless nights. You know, there is no doubt that we have had a very flashy bear market rally over the past year, but as I keep saying, you know, the Nikkei Dow Index in Japan enjoyed 260,000 cumulative rally points over the last 20-odd years, in fact, more than 20 years, and the market in Japan is still 70% lower today than it was two decades ago, despite all the tradable bull runs and temporary episodes of economic renewal. So don't lose heart. This market is going down. Why it has been going up, of course, you know, there's nobody who leaves a footprint on the market, but given the very, very low volume, I have to say that there aren't that many people alive today who've been hit, knocked on the head in 2000 and again in 2007, 2008, who are ready to go in for punishment a third time. So you're having it goosed up by, you know, the professional players who are just coming in basically selling things to each other. I mean, if I take a football and I sell it to my friend for a dollar and he sells it back to me for $1.20 the next day and I sell it back to him for $1.50 the following day and he sells it back for $2 the next day and the following day I sell it for $2.50, is that football worth $1 or $2.50? And if it's worth $2.50, how long is it going to be before we get bored of playing that kind of game together? There's nobody to buy it for less than a dollar, and so the thing falls down and, you know, gets sold back at a dollar or less, you know, in quick order. You know, so I mean, quite frankly, what we're seeing here is it's a kind of Ponzi scheme, although of course, you know, they're not really bringing in new money, but it's a scam. And it's a scam which will build up the values of some of these stocks for the big professionals, and then they'll just sell it to the general public, who'll discover that they have, you know, made back most of their losses from 2008 and think that they're on to a good thing. They'll sell it, and the market will go right back down again. Ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake. This is an accident waiting to happen. And so just before we go to break, let me just comment quickly on a couple of other points here from Frank's email. He talks about the fraud continuing to defy logic. The interest rate is not commensurate with the risk, Frank, very simply because people are buying bonds. There is nowhere else to put money except in relatively secure treasury bonds, and that, of course, pushes interest rates down. It's an artificial phenomenon, and it is only made possible by the fact that we are in a deflationary environment. There is no inflation. Do not allow anybody to tell you or convince you that there is any inflation in the system. There is not. It is deflation. There is no possibility of inflation as long as basic prices of things that we use to create our lives, such as houses, go down in price, and wages go down in price. And don't listen to anybody that tells you that wages are increasing. It's an impossibility. There are a lot of people working today who have not enough work to do, and I assure you that as even if there was a recovery, which there is not, those people would be given a lot more work to do with the current wage that they earn before any new people get hired. You know, nobody, Frank, has repealed the basic laws of economics and mathematics. You know, and quite frankly, the overvalued, overextended market is simply a function of a fantasy which, like everything else, including Greek debt, is going to see the light of day in a very unpleasant and negative way in short order. So please do not fear for any concept that we're into a recovery or a new dawn or all the things that these Wall Street analysts are so desperate to tell you are happening so that they can get you to buy more stocks and more assets and keep them in business. As far as the Obama is concerned, I don't have a strong feeling about Obama. I happen to think he's misguided. I happen to think, as you say, he has a brilliant mind, but he has to frankly play with the cards he's dealt, and the cards are evident in the form of the people who walk through the door at the Oval Office. You know, you can't conjure up geniuses out of dross. You know, the rest of it is for everybody to interpret according to their wish. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I guess it's time to go for a break, and I will be back shortly.
You are listening to Progressive Radio Network.
Hello. Check out my show, The Animal Magnet Pet Radio, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern on Progressive Radio Network. Or catch it anytime you like by scrolling through the archives. You'll hear me, Deborah Wolf, best-selling author and award-winning radio host, chatting with the best pet experts and animal A-listers in the world about controversial topics like breed bans, the indoor versus outdoor cat debate, and whatever else is hot in the news and on their minds that matters to animals and the people who love them. Plus, we tell pet jokes, we'll give you trivia and smart, quirky facts, recipes, and take-home tricks and tests, homework your pets will love. Email your pet problems to me and we'll solve them on air. So listen to The Animal Magnet on Progressive Radio Network and get your animal fix.
Hi, this is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food on the Progressive Radio Network. Please join me every Wednesday at 3 p.m. when we talk about the power of the fork, how our food choices affect our health, the environment, and the treatment of animals. Learn how a plant-based diet of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds is not only delicious, but gentle on the planet.
Martel with Sierra Club Radio. Tune in Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to hear interviews with green authors, activists, politicians, celebrities, and more.
This April 22nd, we will celebrate the 40th anniversary of Earth Day. How far have we come? Where do we still need to go? And how quickly? I'm Betsy Rosenberg, and I've been covering the Green Beat for more than a decade, interviewing the most interesting and influential green leaders about the current state of eco-awareness, action, and activism in America. Join the conversation on the Green Front, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on PRN. It's later than we think, but together we can turn it around.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Okay, let's take a few more emails. One from Bill, who says, Richard, thanks for the reply. Apparently we'd been having some toing and froing on the private email circuit. But I am confused about where one can put their money so it will be safe. Are you saying that the U.S. will default on treasuries? If there comes a time when there is no confidence in the system, then the dollar will be worthless and maybe gold is the answer. What are you telling your listeners to do? Not everyone can pick up and leave the country. It's not possible for most people. And what do you think will happen in the U.S. if there's a loss of confidence in the system? Thanks, Bill. Well, Bill, I don't know whether you've been listening for very long. It sounds from your comments that you haven't been listening for that long on the wake-up call. But let's not put too fine a point to this. The safest place for your money is under your mattress. That is 100% safe, isn't it? I mean, unless the robbers get to it. But basically, your money is your money is your money. You have it, you put it in the garden or under the mattress or wherever it's safe. That's the safest place. Now, I'm not suggesting you do that yet. So don't get me wrong. Don't all call in saying, my God, should we sort of yank our money out of the bank? No, it's not necessary yet. If it becomes necessary, I will tell you. But so far, I trust that there is the ability of the FDIC to use its open line with the Treasury to take down whatever they need to pay out on the failed banks. So you can leave your money in the banks on deposit up to the FDIC limits of $250,000 per depositor. You can leave them in Treasury bills or in Treasury bill money market funds. But that's about it. I mean, if you want total safety, there is nowhere else to go with your money, in my opinion. And all the talk about, you know, municipal bonds, which you should liquidate, is just that. It's talk. It is very, very dangerous, in my opinion, to leave money in municipal bonds. You simply must not take risks with pure money that you wish to keep as money in an insured capacity. What do I think will happen in the U.S.? Untrodden ground, Bill. I don't think it's necessary to make that many precise predictions. I've already said, you know, that people should leave. You say that people can't. Well, I suppose that's what they were saying to Jews in Germany, you know, before the war. And I'm not saying that we have the same problem in the United States, but it's an interesting and useful analogy because people can do whatever they want to do, especially when it comes to, you know, leaving. And if you lose your job, and the chances are it's going to take you a year to find another one, you haven't got much to lose, frankly, by picking up and going. But that's another matter. We may not agree on that. Watch out for these concepts about foreign currencies and their interrelatedness. The dollar being worthless would require hyperinflation, frankly, Bill, which I don't think we're going to see. The dollar is still a sought-after currency not to support the American economy, far from it, but basically the concept here is to pay down one's debts which with dollars which people do not have. Therefore, they need to buy the dollars. So don't be too quick to throw the baby of the dollar down with the bathwater of the economy. Laurie wrote in saying, "Hi, Richard. Don't know if you've heard this interview of whistleblower Andrew Maguire by Eric King. I'd be really interested in hearing your take on Maguire's charges against J.P. Morgan of manipulation in the metals market. Happy Easter, Laurie." And as you can see, some of these emails are a little bit old, but we got delayed by last week's problems with PRN, so we couldn't. I got a little bit behind here. But before we do that, let's take John, a caller. I'm sorry, Frank from Maine, who wants to know how the latest mortgage buyback program will affect the bear market rally. Hello, Frank. How are you?
Something on my Frank. Email.
Hello, Frank.
Think that. I'm sorry.
Could you start again, Frank? I think we didn't catch the
Sure. Richard, I said I'm fine, and I just wanted to qualify something in my email. Part of my comment was my question was rhetorical, not interrogative. I have not given up faith in deflation. I subscribe to that since I first heard you 3-4 years ago, and I understand that. The frustration and the question I have is, how long do you think, and I know this is very difficult to give it's impossible to give a definite answer to this, but how long do you think maneuvers such as the one you first discussed at the beginning of this show, of them pawning off more mortgage garbage on the taxpayer, the latest plan from Geithner, how long do you think that type of thing can keep goosing this bear market rally up? We say in quick order, is quick order 6 months, 9 months, 2 years? It is extremely frustrating if you're short and it's costing you money every minute this thing goes up, even knowing that someday it has to stop. The question is, you know, how much of your resources and how much your threshold for pain can hold out? And I think that's what's behind my question, and I think a lot of John's as well. It's funny because I preached to him last September. He was sure that it was going to go down every week, and I told him you have to be patient. And I find myself, I said to him recently, would you please remind me of my own wisdom? Because I look at this and I just say, where is the end? And that's the thrust of my question.
Well, if you subscribe to the idea, which is perfectly reasonable to do, that the stimulus was responsible in large measure for the recent rise in the market, although I must tell you that after a great decline such as we saw in 2008, a stiff rally is to be expected. And we did have it, and I did expect it. I didn't think it would carry anything like this far, but we did wait several months after the beginning of this rally before taking action on the downside. But if you subscribe to the idea that the stimulus is largely responsible for the continued rise in the market above what the norms of bear market rallies would dictate, the stimulus is over. I mean, theoretically, on the 31st of March, that was it. The actual stimulus packages sort of came to an end. And there are two questions, of course, that arise from that. The first is, what's going to happen to the market? And secondly, what's the government going to do next? Again, you know, we keep arriving at these moments of, the untrodden ground, the place where no man has gone before. This is, of course, a unique situation, and the first thing to realize in order to be able to get a proper handle on it is that we are in a situation many, many times worse than the Great Depression of the 1930s. This puts the Great Depression into the shade. Now, I'd always said that we were going to have a new depression. I'd never had a doubt about that. This was from way back, 10 years ago, I foresaw this coming. But this is actually far worse than I had suspected that we would see. And it's far worse because the government has behaved in a far more irresponsible and desperate manner than anything that was ever proposed in the 1930s by the federal by the FDR government. And so, you know, the chances that there would be another stimulus package, the chances that Geithner might throw himself off the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, or that Bernanke might, you know, I don't know what he might do, but I mean, the chances of these people behaving in an irrational way are significant. But set against that, Frank, is the impatience of the American public. I mean, the American public has now seen that these stimulus packages, whether or not they have benefited the powers that be, the big guys in Wall Street or the banks or whatever, they have not, manifestly not, benefited the American public. And that's where the American public is now going to really take issue with this whole thing. And, of course, with the elections coming up in November, the government is going to have to think long and hard before needing to push even more money down a rat hole here. And I personally think they will not. And I think that when it becomes clear to the powers that be, those who goose the markets on the understanding, you know, that the federal government will step in where commerce just failed to tread, will basically decide that it's not in their interests to do this. They're obviously desperate men at this point. I mean, if you could talk to the, you know, inner soul of Bernanke or Geithner or Obama or any of these clowns, you would realize that they are very worried men, and not necessarily because of the American taxpayer or anybody else, but because of saving their own skins. I may be being unduly harsh, I may not, but the fact is that these people's careers are in dire jeopardy, in my opinion, at this point. And never mind the whys and wherefores of the health bill or any of these other concepts which have no direct impact on what is happening today with Americans. It's going to be years before the health bill programs kick in. So that's really not an issue to be discussed right now. The question is the economy unraveling at a rate which is so fast and furious that nobody can possibly do anything to arrest it? And the answer is unquestionably, Frank, yes. And all we are waiting for at this point is for the powers that be to realize that there is nothing gained in buying this market. There is nothing gained in gaming the system or goosing the figures. All of the lies that keep coming out of the mouths of these corporate CFOs, the government ministers, they don't achieve anything. They're not bringing any value to the table. And my assessment and my understanding from what I read is that the clouds are gathering and the storm is about to break, because people are almost at the point of recognition. And that's the moment we're waiting for. And when that happens, all hell will be let loose in every area of the economy, the markets, everything else. And truly, you know, the Great Depression number two, which is in progress, will bust out open onto the stage in full view, and everybody will simply come to recognize where we stand. And, of course, because the government has overplayed its hand in the early stages, Frank, because this has happened, you have to assume that the government will have run out of bullets. They will not have the wherewithal to arrest this decline, and that's why it will be epic, because it will count in as its victims countries worldwide in every area of the economy of all these countries. And Greece is just the starting point of what Europe has to look forward to. California may well be the starting point of what the United States has to look forward to. But one way or another, there is no way out of this impasse. And don't let anybody try to fool you into thinking otherwise. Just because the markets have been going up, just because people have been goosed into spending more money that they don't have, which is manifestly what's been going on, people being encouraged not to pay their mortgages and then spend the money elsewhere. This is what's been going on. This is why you're seeing full restaurants, why you know people have been buying cars and gewgaws that otherwise they wouldn't be able to afford. I mean, all this is going to come to a head. And I know that you are very anxious to know when it's going to happen, what will be the starting point for this. And I have to tell you that all that that we could know at this point is that the clouds, as I said, are gathering and that the storm is about to break. And I think it is imminent. And when I say imminent, I mean in the next few weeks or months at the very outside, but probably in the next few weeks, this whole thing is going to turn over and unravel, and the world will be much the worse for it. So there you are, Frank. That's what I have for you at this point. Okay, well, thanks. Another email. I was going to talk about Andrew Maguire. Very quickly, ladies and gentlemen, I wish I had more time. Unfortunately, I don't have the time to discuss this issue of the gold market and the way in which these banks have been lying and misrepresenting their positions in gold. So I'll do it as briefly as I can. I will tell you this. In the gold market, as in any other market in the commodity field, there are speculators and there are hedgers. Speculators are simply people who want to make some quick money buying or selling commodities based on their gut feeling about what's going to happen. Hedgers are people who have actually had experience in the markets and who have, for better or for worse, taken positions in the markets according to their situation in the physical market, and they are supposed to be hedging the money that they have placed in the physical market. And what has been exposed is that many of these banks have been pretending to be hedgers, but have in fact been selling into the market more gold than exists in their inventory. And that is illegal. As a hedger, that is absolutely illegal. And nobody up until now has managed to prove that they're doing this. And it appears that Mr. Maguire has come out with evidence that this has been going on, which has been suspected to have been going on for many years. And the question is, why do they do this? Well, the answer is because many of the gold mines have sold forward more gold than they have mined in the expectation that the gold market would go down and they would be able to cover their gold shorts at a cheaper price than they took them out. And this, of course, hasn't been the case. So as the gold market has risen in recent years, they've been caught short with all this sold gold that they never had. And, of course, the banks are behind this because they have to do this through an organization. And so if it is true that this has been happening, that you should be looking forward to some pretty heavy scandals coming out over the next few years. And I don't know when this will happen and if it will happen and if it's even true. But that's basically what's been going on, Laurie. And I hope that's an adequate explanation. So let's look at Mike Reidinger's email. Mike Reidinger has to say this. He says, "Oh, great one. I'm sure you are familiar with the above-mentioned article from dollarcollapse.com, which in the end mentions preparing for a short strategy, including many index-type stocks that mention on your show regularly. I concur with Jordan Rubino's endgame and want to ask you this. Will this new shorting rule from the SEC hamper our ability to close out our short winning positions? In a nutshell, when the equity starts going down, do we have to wait for an uptick to get out? Thanks for your great service, Richard." Mike Reidinger. The short strategy requires, obviously, the short strategy requires, excuse me, one second. Need to just put this on Do Not Disturb. I forgot to mute my telephones before coming onto the show. Woe is me, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. So the shorting rule from the SEC doesn't hamper any ability to close out winning positions, no. Shorting, they're not attempting to short, to stop shorting at this point. What they're trying to do is simply to stop the naked shorts, that's to say the shorts which are not covered by stock that has been borrowed. And in certain cases, they will try to perhaps suspend shorting in certain sectors. But don't forget, if you are already short in the stock market, nothing can touch you because all you can do with your shorts is cover them. So whereas they potentially might be able to prevent you shorting more, although I don't think they will, they cannot protect you, they cannot prevent you from holding the shorts you already have, and of course from covering those shorts, that's to say from buying back your short positions. Okay, so we have time, we don't really have time. I guess we have time, yeah, for one more email here. This is from Hugh, who says, Dear Richard, on your last wake-up call, you described a deception, as I understand you, so outrageous that I had to ask for a clarification. Were you saying that the March consumer purchases statistics, which the popular media reported to be significantly up, signaling yet another confrontation of the alleged end of the recession, were the results of averaging the reported increased sales of a greatly shrunken pool through bankruptcy of retailers? Such a statistic, to my mind, could clearly mask an actual decrease in the volume of total sales by concentrating a fewer numbers of customers into yet fewer outlets, thereby boosting their sales increase averages without boosting total sales, in the somewhat analogous manipulation by which you could increase the population density in a room, even if you remove some of the people, by shrinking the dimensions of the room. That was a sentence and a half, wasn't it, Hugh? The answer is yes. That's what did happen. They masked the increase by taking the remaining sales and basically pushing the figures into those sales, boosting them and making it look as though the total sales figures had increased. And I continue with Hugh's letter here, who says, am I correct in assuming, in understanding that the spending data reported is in fact the average reported increased sales of individual outlets, not the total amount of money spent compared with the total amount of money spent in another period? Yes, Hugh. If so, this is absolutely outrageous, and your citing of decreased state sales tax revenues during the same period would certainly be another length of tissue stuck to the heel of this media announcement. I won't carry this last analogy any further to its origin. Your wonderful shows are a source and a forum. Thanks again, Hugh. Well, Hugh, thank you very much for your time and for your long and involved email, which clearly required a lot of thought. And the time appears to be running out on me here, although I'm not made aware of how much longer we do have. But, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for your time, and I hope that you will, as I say, listen to yesterday's show on the discussion group, and I look forward to talking to you again next week, or rather on Friday, and I wish you a very successful and happy coming week. I will talk to you again then. This is Richard Martin from the Wake Up Call saying bye-bye to them.